Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, listeners, and this is Sandra Bueno with Power to Be You on Blog Talk Radio. And today's date is the 13th of March, and I am coming to you across this station for our one-hour Empowering Author series. Our visionary author today is a continuation, part two, from last week's half an hour presentation. For you to go back into the archives, you can look at Thursday, the 6th of March, and listen to our first part interview with Harvey Deutschendorf. He is the author and speaker with his book, The Other Kind of Smart, Boost Your Emotional Intelligence for Greater Power and Joy at Home, Work, and Play. And this is something that is so important. It is so key that Harvey and I have decided to come across today and really impress upon you the importance of what emotional intelligence is for our well-being. And I have asked Harvey to come online and be gracious enough to contribute a lot of his knowledge and his interaction with all of his experience in this medium. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Harvey, and he is author and speaker of emotional intelligence. He is an expert in this medium. He is a coach for a 2,000-plus member human resource organization. He is also a member of the Mankind Project and the Human Capital Institute. You can go online and research that, and you will see where there's so much information for you to actually participate and learn from these different organizations. He is certified to administer the Bar-On EQI, which is the first scientifically valid test for emotional intelligence approved by the American Psychological Association. Harvey lives in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, will soon release his book, as it is right now a copy that is being handled by the publishers. So you can go online and download and purchase his e-copy book at www.theotherkindofsmart.com. And if there is more information to be given at this time, Harvey is going to tell you directly. So, Harvey, welcome on Power to Be You again.
Well, thank you, Sandra, and I'm looking forward once again to talking with you and sharing what I know with your listeners. It always excites me when I have an opportunity to talk about this subject and share it with the people out there. That's great.
Well, thank you, because like I told you, the fact that the beauty of having this program is the fact that we are able to archive and record what we are speaking of. And from my perspective, this information, once it is there and it is you know, cued and recorded, this will be available for really anyone from any place in the world to access, to reach, to share. And the more people that can truly understand what we mean by emotional IQ, which seems to be such a complicated term, and at the end it is so basic, you know, this is, I think, the final effect of what we are trying to work with and we're trying to bring to the listeners. So, you know, I am so pleased because your book is so easy. It's such an informative, such a practical, and a very real and heartfelt, quote-unquote, self-help book. But this is for anyone, you know, any person, any child, any young individual, any old individual, anyone can take this book and immediately apply it to their lives and truly decide to make a difference. And you show them and you give them alternatives, you give them explanations, you give them examples. So I just truly want to support your work, because I believe that this is the key to us being able to change our conditioning and where we are today as a society.
Yes, that's true, Sandra. In the book, there are, at the back of all the different chapters, there's different stories, and then there's different little everyday exercises that people can do there to that will increase areas of emotional intelligence they feel that they may need some help in. Now, this can be done in as little as 5 minutes a day. There's lots of exercise in there, but you know, people are time constrained. They have a lot of interest, you know, and a lot of different things to do. What they could do is they can just pick one area that they feel they, for example, need the most help in. Say it's flexibility. It may be something like impulse control, and say, ha ha, this is the area that I think I need to improve in. And they can go to the back of the chapter there, and they can pick one exercise that they can do maybe for 5 minutes a day and continue to do that. So it's very easy to use something out of this this book. You don't have to take it all. You can take it in little bite-sized pieces, or, you know, if you wish, you can take on a lot of the exercises. It's basically up to you. But you can see some benefit from it by just, like I say, as little as 5 minutes a day, taking one of the little exercises and just doing it on a regular basis.
So let me ask you, for one of the things that I've learned through coaching and that I have been taught is to always, when we learn something, when we are able to say we've learned it, is when we're able to share this information with someone else and teach it to them or share it with them so that they understand. And the caveat here is that if you can help a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old understand what you mean, then you are definitely communicating with effectiveness and with a lot of real heartfelt purpose. So in understanding what emotional IQ is, can you explain it so that, you know, a very young person will understand?
Okay. I can give you a story, and how I best actually teach is to tell stories. And I can give you a good story from the book that will give me, that will tell your listeners about, and that young people will be able to understand as well what emotional intelligence is. That, and this is a true story. I had a friend of mine, Joan. Her and I were out in the park, and with two of her grandchildren. There was Warren and Josh, and I think Warren was the older one, 11 or something, and his younger brother Josh was 5 or 6, something like that. And Warren had done something to Josh that, you know, they typically, you know, typical brothers, they would, you know, play together and then they would fight. And, you know, Warren had done something, was picking on Josh or something. Josh started wailing, crying. And so Joan, my friend, said to Josh, said, "I understand that you've been hurt. You need to cry. If it doesn't stop, though, in 5 minutes, you're going to have to go sit in the car." So here I was thought, uh-oh, you know, when he's going to start crying, I can see this coming. There's going to be crying, and then there's going to be, you know, Joan's going to be threatening, "You got to stop that," and there's going to be a long, drawn-out battle because, you know, you can't, I thought, I was told, you can't reason with somebody that age. It's like trying to reason with a terrorist. So when Joan said this, like, there's a few more sputters and wails out of Josh. And he said, "Okay." And he stopped crying. And, like, a few minutes later, you know, they're back playing again. And I was just totally, totally amazed by this, that you could actually, you know, be this effective in talking to a 5-year-old. What Joan had done, though, which was very, very good, and that her grandson needed to hear, was she acknowledged his feelings, the fact that he was crying because he felt hurt, that he had a right to those feelings, he had a right to express them. The other thing, though, she did was say, "Okay, you've got a right to those feelings. Don't wallow in, don't let it drag on. It's time to get those feelings out, and it's also to move on." And he grasped that. He understood it, and he was okay. You know, he said, "Okay." He was fine with it. I was just shocked by the whole thing. But that's how it emotional intelligence and understanding of it can work. Her simple act in just acknowledging the fact that, yeah, his brother had done something to him which he thought was rotten. He felt hurt. And he had, you know, he's expressing himself. And that was, you know, that was acknowledged. So, yeah, that was an example there.
And I think that, and I thank you for that, because, you know, this is why I asked you this, because a lot of people, we are so conditioned as a society, you know, we are so in the box. And the more I really pursued this personal development, this desire to empower people with distinctions and with stories and with other individuals who believe in themselves and believe in their work, you know, for me, I become even more and more aware of looking in and saying, you know, where we are today in this world and with technology and with everything that's all the stimulus that we have and with the results that we are seeing from our behavior, you know, we need to understand. We need to say, okay, what is going on? And not just stay on the issue, but really look for solutions. And the solutions come through our awareness and through our willingness to really, you know, look at what's there. And like you said, you know, with this child, the awareness that there was a certain state, you know, here he was feeling something because obviously there was a value that was either, you know, there were feelings that were hurt, there was something that was violated, you know, there was a need that was not met. And once it was understood by an adult and it was, you know, and it was handled and it was acknowledged and then they were given a solution or a different meaning, the child got over it. And there they were together once again, you know, living and loving and laughing and moving forward. And, you know, what your exercise just did or your example was really, you know, it really gave us insight into saying there are always alternatives and the meaning that we give to our situation. If we are not able to, you know, to understand the why and understand that we have a choice in choosing our interpretation, then we get stuck. And then we get stuck with those bad feelings that we have inside of us.
That's correct, yes. When we actually, a lot of times when we get stuck on something and we have negative reactions to something that happens, it's actually not the event itself that we're reacting to. It's something in the event that reminds us. It's the event is a trigger that reminds us of something. Of course, that's happened in the past. And that explains why I give an example here, you know, in the book, and it's an example of, you know, why people react differently. For example, if I was in a speaking to a group, and I said something to the group, you know, something very very you know, derogatory, says, you know, you people aren't very smart or whatever. Some people in the group, for example, somebody in the group who was his father, you know, or brother, whatever, he was raised in a situation where he was constantly told that, might get very, very angry. But it wouldn't be because of it would trigger those negative emotions. Another person who didn't have that experience would maybe not react with anger, but would react with surprise, maybe confusion as to why I would say that type of thing, but their reactions would be quite differently, and because they have a different framework for reacting to that. They would, somebody who has never been, told that they're not very smart, whatever, would not react in an angry way. They would just sort of be surprised because that would not have any sort of negative connotation to them. Whatever we react to, it's based upon what it triggers from us in the past. And one of the things that we can helps us is becoming aware of what those things are in our past. And once we're aware of that, then we have much more control over the way we react and our emotions, and much more control over our lives.
So how would you say, if a person, let's say we're talking to a person right now, there's someone in the listening audience that has a history of a life of, you know, beration. I mean, he or she has been always told you're not going to succeed, or, you know, you're a loser, or, you know, you think you're all that, or just any situation that brings about bad feelings or hurtful feelings, you know, problems with self-esteem. What would you say how would they go about it? And also, how long would this take?
Okay, well, that's actually a good question, Sandra. We're talking about something called self-regard. Now, what this person the thing for this person to do is to avoid anybody in their lives that isn't supportive. First of all, just I say run away from people that aren't supportive in their goals and their and find people that are going to be supportive. Now, the trick to increasing our self-regard is to set goals and reach those goals. You know, the thing is, somebody else cannot really increase our self-regard by telling us. It can increase our feeling good about ourselves by encouraging us to go after our goals, by helping us to set goals, by helping us to achieve. But it is our own achievement that will make us feel better about ourselves. Now, when we're setting goals, it's important to set goals that will make us struggle to reach them, but that still are achievable. And we need to constantly set those goals. When we reach them, we'll feel better, and we need to find people to help us to encourage us to set out goals and to achieve them. Now, I talk about different kind of goals. Now, there's big huge goals. Like, for example, for me, a big huge goal is getting a book published. That's like a home run. Most of the time, those kind of things don't happen in our lives. We shouldn't count on that to make us feel better. But everyday type of, I mean, I feel good when I find a new, I learn something new on the computer, this new program, I learn something that's new, and I learn how to operate it. It makes me feel good. It gives me a feeling of achievement. So we should be looking at little things that we can learn every day, we can achieve every day, that we're afraid to do. It makes us feel good. All of those things add up, and we should be looking for that every day.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I definitely appreciate you saying that, because it really does come down to, you know, like you said, it's how do we feel good about ourselves, and no one is going to help us feel, you know, as good about ourselves as we will help ourselves feel good about who we are, what we stand for. And, you know, I will tell you that this truly comes about, you know, by the people that surround us. It is established at a very young, early age. You know, the words that are said, the situations, the environment, specifically since our life is surrounded by relationships. You know, we are our life stories are a compilation of stories surrounding relationships with our parents, with our, you know, with our peer group, with our family members, with our teachers. You know, really, this is where we have to be able to go back and look at that situation and say, you know what, this is where that is coming from. And, you know, what I want to say is this. Yesterday, I had an amazing example of understanding this in a very real form, and I'd like to just share that with you, because it really woke me up this morning. It woke me up at 5 in the morning, and I had to write it down because I felt that this is one of my callings of, you know, how to reveal this and how to share it with other people. But yesterday, as I was speaking to my son, I have a 7-year-old boy son, and he was basically brought up as a single child, and he had a lot of female energy around him. He had my energy as well as my mother's energy. And though his grandfather was also part of the everyday setup, grandfather is 65 years old. So grandfather's not really able to assert all of that, you know, machismo into him. So my son he's very humble, he's very nice, he's very kind, he's very loving. He is also very, very smart, and he definitely has a very good vocabulary. But when it comes to being rough, or when it comes to being the typical boy, especially lately, you know, there's been that thing that if you brush up against him, or you you hit him in the wrong way right away, oh, you hurt me, and then he'll cry, you know. So yesterday, I was told by his grandma that he had shared with grandpa that the kids had called him a sissy. So, of course, as a mother, right away it's like, oh, no, I got to stop this. I got to go in there, because before the label starts, before other kids pick up on it, before any of this happens, I need to understand what's going on and help them. Well, when I asked him about it, he didn't remember. He said, no, that's not true. They haven't said that. No, no, no. So what I did was I said, okay, and his name is Ulysses. I said, okay, Ulysses, let's do an exercise right now. Hit me right here or push me right here, and then I'm going to show you something. So what I did is I showed him a reaction so that if the example was if somebody were hitting him, you know, or pushing him or violating his space, I was going to show him a different reaction, specifically the one that he tends to have. So the first one was very much of, oh, you hurt me, and, you know, the one that resembles more of how he would be. So I showed him that. He started laughing, you know, and I played it out. Then I said, okay, hit me or push me here again. So he did it, and the next one escalated to a different level. It was more of, you know, hey, stop it. Why are you doing this to me? I don't like you doing this. And then he laughed again. And then the next one, I made it be very over the top, and I got like almost in his face, and I got kind of like, you know, I'm going to tell on you and don't do this and you have no right. And I asked him, you know, how he felt. So what ended up happening was that at that moment he said to me, and I said, Ulysses, you need to be strong. You need to, you know, you need to be strong. You need to have character. You need to be able to have the confidence to let someone know that they are stepping over. And of course I used his language. Well, right afterwards, he said to me, he goes, Ma, look, I want to show you something. He goes, hit me right here. So, you know, I'm kind of like following along. So I hit him on the arm. Then he looks at me and he goes, hit me again. And I hit him again. And I'm hitting him a little harder now. And he's still not responding. So then he goes, hit me again. And my fingers are already burning. And I'm like, Ulysses, I'm not going to hit you again. And he goes, well, Ma, I want to show you how strong I am. When he said that to me, my heart just completely, like, you know, I immediately felt for him, because I realized my meaning of strong is different than his interpretation of what strong is. Yeah. And at that moment, I had the opportunity to enforce in him and to help him understand what I was talking about when I said strong, coming from a place of how you respect yourself, how you value yourself, how you, you know, allow yourself to stand up for your own rights by speaking and communicating what you don't like about someone's behavior toward you. And at that moment, I was like, wow, you know, I was like, wow, this is what happens oftentimes. You know, I mean, children only learn what they are exposed to. And without us being able to have that understanding of, you know, emotions and what they mean and why we react and how we have the ability to interpret differently, and just because someone said something, it doesn't mean that they're, you know, berating us, or, you know, just having all of that is what allows us to not, you know, to get over things and to just really not take it personally and to overcome an injustice or become some, and, you know, and this for me was so important that this morning when I awoke, that's what talked to me, because it really said, you know, we go through life, you know, basing how we react on our own upbringing, and that's what we give off to others. So, yeah, you know, this just killed my heart, because I was like, my son can go around telling people to hit him all the time, and in his little mind, he's going to be thinking that he's being strong, and instead, he's going to be putting himself as a victim, so that everyone can come and abuse him. And had I not stepped in and, you know, and put that idea in a different way and understood how he was understanding me, I could have hurt him a lot for a lot, you know, of his life.
Yes, I have a. I don't have you know, children of my own, but I have a nephew who's now. Well, he's 17 now. He's going to be graduating. So I've been very involved in his life, and I know that he was very close to his mother growing up. His father wasn't very involved with him, and that. So what his mother did, though, was she was, I think, worried about his, you know, self-regard, things like that, and so she enrolled him in the karate, basically, and he's been ever since he was very young. And what that has really done for him is that it's really given him a lot of self regard. He feels very good about, and not only self-regard, but a lot of discipline, because he had to go all the time to these different events, and he had to go practice once a week, whatever, and it gave him a real feeling of self-confidence, and you know, he's never had to really use it or anything like that to defend himself. The school that he goes to is quite good. There's always, you know, the odd case of bullying or whatever, but it's made him feel really good about who he is, and he's seen the progression in his karate classes and that, and he feels good about the fact that he's been able to achieve this. So he's become very, very well balanced and able to, if he had to, if somebody was pushing around, he would be able to defend himself. But because he gives off that aura now of that he is confident and he is able to, I think other kids will sense that and as well. They will sense that in your son if they see that your son is, confident and that he's one that will not be pushed around and that type of thing.
And this translates, again, to any adult who has not had that fulfilled in their lives. They can, with what you just said, with the self-regard, they can go in and say, okay, you know, what is the issue? Where am I missing? Where do I need to fill it in? And now what can I do to bring that into my life? So, you know, a lot of people will stay in a victim mode just simply because they don't have any options or any tools to effectively deal with what they're feeling. You know, and right now with our example, you know, and believe me, with my son, I have already said it's lack of time for me in my way of not enrolling him yet in any sports, but I have already told him, I said, pick one, ice hockey, you know, karate, kickboxing, but you know, I have told them, and I said, this is where you're going to go, and I do not care, you are going, you know, for all the right reasons. But as far as adults, you know, this is really where my heart also just bleeds, because there are options, and it just requires us to be able to understand what's available. And this is why your book, to me, The Other Kind of Smart, is so essential. It is, you know, I just truly, you know, I mean, just really, I mean, pray that your book is going to have such an extended availability and presence in our media and in our world, because I can see people really going in there and really without having to go to the psychologist and the psychiatrist and, you know, think that they are sick or that there's something wrong with them, realize that, you know, we can only deal with our situation with as much tools that we have. If we don't have them, then we can't really build upon them. You know, and that's like construction. You know, I mean, maybe the people in Egypt created the pyramids, you know, with their bare hands, but in today's world, you know, we need some material to be able to erect a building. So it's kind of like the same thing. For us to erect our lives, we need insight. We need this feeding in of essential and helpful information and tools and skills that we can apply to our lives so that we can change what's not working and that we can adapt to what's going on and live our lives in a healthier, happier, more successful way. So, you know, with your book, I'm telling you, I'm so excited over it because you relate to a lot of these things that's really practical to all of us. Like you just said, self-regard. What else do you have in terms of, would this be a theme? Would this be an area of study? How do you apply, how do you put self-regard in there?
Okay, self-regard is one of the chapters, actually. It talks about 15 areas of emotional intelligence, and every one of those is a chapter. And again, self-regard has stories, and it has techniques for, at the end of it, for increasing your self regard, and it is one of the components of living well, having a good life. It's a very, very important component because, of course, when you have a lot of self regard, it leads to you're going to be very healthy in a lot of other areas. So it's a cornerstone. You have to feel good about yourself, because if you don't, others aren't going to feel good about you either. But when you were talking there, Sandra, you used the magic word, and it's the magic word was do. In order to help yourself in any one of these areas, what you have to do, you have to get out there and you actually have to practice these things. They will not come about by just reading about them. And this is where I think a lot of people get stuck in an endless cycle of, you know, reading self-help and going to different seminars. And I see people going to, you know, motivational type workshops, and then, you know, you see them at the next one and at the next one and at the next one. You think, well, you know, isn't any of this working, because these people are always there? Well, the whole thing is that these things are all great and they have very useful information, but you have to use it. You actually have to get down and you actually have to do something with it. If you don't, then it's not for you. And as much as the knowledge of emotional intelligence and what it can do and how it works in your life, you need that, of course. But you need to actually, if there's an area that you need to improve in, you need to actually do some of these things. And if you do them, you'll actually see results. And I have seen results, and I've seen results in people that have used it. So it's a matter of doing it. And the doing is the most difficult part. I mean, you know, I know it's easy to sit and read about these things and imagine them and go to a motivational seminar. The doing can actually be hard work. And what I suggest is that when you do something, whether it's something that it can be a little thing. If you want to, you know, somebody that you want to talk to that you're too shy to or afraid to approach, and you set the goal of, well, I want to go and talk to this person, I want to ask them something or whatever. When you actually do it, reward yourself. You know, it can be a little thing. Go and treat yourself to something that you normally wouldn't the last day, but reward yourself. Make it worthwhile for you to do this. Increase the good feelings for yourself. Also, on the other hand, if you don't do it, you know, you could set yourself a negative, you know, reward. So you have to do something that you really don't want to do. So you could add, you know, you could motivate or unmotivate yourself, you know, as you choose.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned that word "do," because truly it is about that. I think one of the hardest, the biggest challenge is, you know, to be true to ourselves. And, you know, most people will lie to everyone else, or will put up a facade, or, you know, will show the world that everything's okay, you know, relationship is okay, everything is great, and internally they're in turmoil, because, again, all of these feelings are bottled up inside, and, you know, without releasing them and without knowing how to let go and without learning how to interpret them differently, you know, or not having that freedom, you know, what is a human being to do but truly, you know, implode? If you don't explode outwardly, then you're going to implode, and that's only going to kill your spirit, kill your abilities, kill your dreams. So, you know, thank you for really bringing that point about. And So would you say that basically emotional IQ is learning how to manage our feelings?
Yes, it's learning how to manage our feelings, how to actually, change our feelings. Actually, there's if we're practicing a lot of these things, our feelings should become more positive, and the feelings that do come up, that are, destructive feelings like anger, we should be able to get a much better grip on those feelings, and they're feelings that, you know, will not last, you know, have the intensity that they did before. They won't last as long. We'll have a much better grip on those feelings, and they will not impact us the way that they did before. It's learning to manage feelings. I mean, feelings are going to come up for us regardless. We're going to, you know, get angry. We're in traffic. We're going to get angry at people. We're going to have self-doubt. You know, we're going to have feelings of, you know, dependency and things like that. But we'll be able to manage those, and being able to manage those is, I think, the essence of being able to live well and have a good life, have good relationships. And yeah, the other thing is, it is all about, when it comes down to it, life is all about relationships and being able to develop good relationships. Everything that we have in life that's worthwhile eventually comes down to that. We can trace it back to us being able to relate well with other people and to form those kind of close bonds. Everything really goes back to that, and you know, that's the most important thing of all.
So let me ask you, when we're looking at emotions and we're looking at feelings, what would you say is not the meaning, but the significance of each? Or what is the definition of each, of emotions and of feelings?
Well, that's a good question.
I'm tricking you now. You know that I'm tricking you because I'm setting, I'm setting you up to get you out.
Emotions is something generally that we feel, and I'm just thinking it's from the Greek word emote, which means to move us, and because we feel them, we really don't think about really what emotions are all the time, and I would have to say that emotions are basically things that motivate us, that make us act in certain ways. They're things that drive us, that drive our lives, and it's very interesting because that makes me think. There was a time not too long ago where the thought was that we're supposed to keep our emotions intact. We're supposed to, especially in the workplace. That was believed, and you know, it wasn't that many years ago that females were not in the workplace. They were and then they were in certain occupations in the workplace, and the whole reason for keeping for that was because they were too emotional, and it was thought that, you know, what we had to do was, once we got into the door at work, once we got to work, we would keep our emotions buried. We would keep them, under check and stuff, and they would not in any way impact us, because emotions were very troubling things that we didn't know how to deal with. They were bothersome. So if we could just suppress them, then they'd be out of the way. Well, we now know that that's, of course, not possible. They're going to impact us whether we like it or not or whatever. We know that they drive and motivate us. So we have to find some way of dealing with them, because if not, they're going to affect us in a very negative way. If we're able to turn that around, so if we can make motion so they can work for us, that's the trick, I think.
So would you say the response that you have toward that emotion, or your perception of that situation, would that, for example, be a positive way of dealing with that specific emotion?
Well, there's...
emotion is negative, because we have both. We have the good emotions, so we're feeling happy, sad, happy, excited, elated, and that's also, I'll just add, the emotional IQ, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but emotional IQ also brings in our ability to tap into the different emotions, correct?
That's
to
right.
To expand that vocabulary of emotions?
Yes, it's about our ability to recognize emotions and the emotions that we're feeling, and that's the first aspect of our emotional intelligence, and it's the first thing is emotional self-awareness. We need to be aware of what our emotions are, and we need to know when we're experiencing them. Now, of course, some of the emotions are very, easy to recognize and experience. For example, anger. See, there are certain emotions that society allows, and especially in men, we've always allowed anger. We haven't allowed a lot. Men haven't been allowed to experience a lot of other emotions. That's changing, that type of thing. as well as women, they've been allowed certain emotions, and but not, you know, not others. Again, and society has made real judgments about those types of emotions. But it's very important that we recognize our own emotions. Now, some people just naturally are able to do this a lot better than other people. And what we can do is if we have trouble with that, we just you know, close our eyes and we can feel our emotions throughout our body, that type of thing. It's just that. Now, some people may if you're having real trouble, some people may have been just, you know, taught to suppress their emotions in their family or whatever growing up. You're probably not one of those people, Sandra. I mean, when I was growing up, we there was a lot of anger. We were able to express our emotions. But some people may have grown up in an atmosphere where emotions were so suppressed, they may not recognize certain things. Now, you know, there I suggest, you know, people can go to therapists and they can talk about that type of thing. There's also groups out there. There's an organization called the Mankind Project for men, and then there's another organization called Women Within for women, and that helps people. And actually, people are encouraged when they go to these to express their emotions, to bring them out, to share them, to recognize them. And this is the place to do that. This is the place to bring out your emotions, to look at your emotions. And it's a safe environment to share emotions, bring them out. And then we can have a look at them. We can see what those feel like. And then after that, we can find out how we can learn to manage them.
Yes, that's excellent. And thank you for sharing, again, those two other resources that will be very helpful. You know, and when I told you at the beginning that I set you up is because I've been working with the youth and mentor coaching, and the program that we have is primarily based, you know, one of the modules that we use is our state. Our state, you know, how we manage our states. And, of course, everything is about emotions and feelings and how it's energy, you know, energy. And by the way, you got 100, so you can wipe the sweat off your brow because you knew your topic. You know, that's funny because we were, you know, both of us attended an event where the actual another radio host from California, she's been doing this for many, many years. She herself said, you know, whenever I bring an author on my radio show, I read the material and I will ask them questions from their own material. So if they've had a ghostwriter, and they're going to be in trouble because they'll be like, what?
That's a good question. We're talking about emotional intelligence. You're wondering what exactly are emotions, and actually I dealt with that area so much, and I never really thought exactly what they were. It's something we experience every day, but never actually sort of really thought. Now, what really are they? So it's a good question.
But you know what? Because you know it innately, and when you are able to tap into it, you know, for you it's common sense. For other people, it's not. And like you said, if they've been repressed, if they haven't been allowed to have freedom in their expression or in their ability to communicate, or, you know, there wasn't a safe place for them to express themselves, and they were immediately, you know, like I think in your book you have it, you know, a father of a 40-year-old man who grew up feeling that he was unworthy, who grew up feeling that, you know, he was criticized by the dad. And oftentimes we see that, you know, I refer to it with my son where, you know, a man, you know, if they start doing something right away, they're going to be told, oh, you're a sissy, or you're this, or you're that. Well, that person is going to shut themselves inward, and they're not going to want to express themselves. And as they grow up, they say, look, I'd rather be quiet and, you know, and be a loner, or I'd rather just be timid, or I'd rather just be shy, because rather than be told I'm stupid, or rather than be hurt, I'll just be in my own little cocoon. You know, and that's where, you know, we have to go in there and kind of pry them open. But if they're uncomfortable with that, then they're going to be like, I'd rather not go there. You know, I'd rather stay where I am. So, you know, as far as the definition of emotions, with it, you know, being there to give us a message, that's, you know, that's really great, because really this, without knowing that emotions are messengers, then we get stuck on that emotion and we think that we have to accept it as the way. You know,
that's right. And that, these organizations are so, I mean, I just, there's, you know, it's so wonderful that we have these now. I mean, we didn't have these organizations until the, you know, the mid-90s, and they're doing such valuable work. And you know, I have seen the work that especially the Mankind Project has done. I've been through this myself, and they will, you know, a man will go there with some, you know, really repressed emotions and stuff, and they're able to bring those emotions out. They're able to, you know, to get the man to express those emotions, and which is the first step to healing, which needs to be done. And it's also, it's a very frightening step, of course, but it's necessary, because, you know, unless that happens, the you know, the healing process can't start. Because so I've seen wonderful work, and it's done in a very in a very warm, and it's done in a very supportive environment, where you know, they there's men in these groups. I know I can speak for the Mankind Projects that are very good at that, a lot of experience at helping men bring out these types of emotions and issues, and they're encouraged to bring them out. They're supported in bringing them out, and then, you know, the healing process starts after that. But, you know, we're just so fortunate now to have these types of organizations and such awareness, because we don't have to live with all the baggage now that's been you know, dumped on us. And I make the point of, again, in this book, and saying that, you know, a lot of it was dumped on by our parents and stuff, but the point is, most of it wasn't done maliciously. Most of it was done just from not knowing. You know, they didn't really realize the impact that this type of thing would have, you know, on their children. And I'm sure that in my story about Brad, his father, you know, still calling him, you know, a dummy and an idiot, you know, he probably never ever really thought and didn't even realize what sort of an impact that was having on his son. Because I'm sure if you talk to the father, he wouldn't see himself as a monster or an abuser. He just was not aware until he was confronted by his son about what impact that really did have.
Yeah. Well, what's really good about you bringing awareness again to what's available out there, it's that age of enlightenment where we are, where people are recognizing that, wait a minute, we have to stop that dumping and that negative, you know, that negative bond that we have with our limiting beliefs because of past generations or because of what was done 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And people, I really see that there is an enlightenment with people that are going out there and undertaking this sort of study, you know, which should be the way, because just because we're 30 or we're 40 or we're 50, you know, we stop learning and then we sit at home and watch TV and watch Desperate Housewives and watch the Dating Game and, you know, Dancing with the Stars. Well, that's great entertainment, but that is not great real knowledge into helping us deal with our emotions, helping us deal with our relationships, helping us deal when somebody, you know, inflicts injustice upon our being. So, you know, what I really want to say is that there are so many things out there. There's so much free information that all we need to do is just really take it and embrace it. And, of course, based on who's delivering it and their method of doing it, it can either be complicated or it can be simple. And for me, your book is one of the simplest ways to really understand the psychology behind what our feelings are, what our emotions are, what behavioral management is. If you really want to get clinical and, you know, and go into the brain and think about it and download studies and go into 300 years ago and say, who started this? You can do that. But you have taken a lot of that and you have condensed it to a very clear and practical book that is so valuable that I'm just like, you know, I'm not getting rid of my book.
Well, thank you, Sandra, for those kind words and the you know, your support. But yes, what I felt was that you know, there was there's been a lot written on emotional intelligence, but again, as I talked before, I was frustrated because all of this really didn't it couldn't be sort of boiled down to something that was really useful and that people could right away, you know, recognize that understand easily and that they can use right away, in which it was something that was really, I felt, necessary. So, you know, I was compelled to go out there and bring them something that they could use in everyday life. So, but you know, there will be people again that will want to know more. You know, that will, and there's a lot out there to read and on emotional intelligence to learn the history of it and how we've progressed to where we've progressed. But basically, we're now in a situation where we're able to understand emotions a lot better. We've progressed to the point where we understand, you know, how we what we teach our children, how we treat our children, has such a huge impact upon their lives, and that's the beauty of it, is now that parents can become so much more aware. We're going to be raising children that are so much healthier and you know, well adjusted, and will have such an advantage of in life. So. You know, the best gift that you can have, give your children is to basically become somebody who is very, very aware and you know, teaches the children, you know, to have healthy emotions and to healthy management of their emotions. That is the greatest gift that you can give them in this world.
Yeah, I want to add something, because this is really another like addition. This is from the coaching, from the youth coaching, which one of the things that we impress upon the kids primarily, and of course the mentors, is that as emotions is energy in motion, you know, our emotions are derived from what we're doing, you know, from where we're at, but it's also The how an emotion happens is based on three conditions, and those conditions I've actually referred to before in a previous show sometime maybe 4 months ago on state management, was about three ways, which is the body, the words, and the focus. So like you said it before, when you said anger, can you say it again? If you're right now going to show us what anger was, or if I were to ask you, be angry. Can you just say, you know, I'm angry, if you were angry?
Well, I could say I'm right now, I could say I'm angry, but you won't believe me because my voice tone and doesn't match, you know, the words. I could say I'm angry, you know, and pretend that I'm angry, you could say you're angry. However, if your tone doesn't match, or you're you know, you look very relaxed while you're saying that, nobody's going to, you know, believe you're angry. The expression, you have to look tense. Your voice has to sound angry for that to sound realistic.
See, and you just answered it, because you have emotional intelligence, so you're able to say and do different things. Most people will only be able to do as they feel, which the feeling again is what, when we're angry, number one, the inflection of the voice, the strength of that voice. You know, I'm angry. What happens when you say that? I know for me, I will take my fist and I will make it, you know, somehow I will like punch the air or do a fist in the air somehow. I'll move my body in a certain way. You know, I'll grimace my face and, you know, I'll tense up in my shoulders. So all of that you just explained supports the emotional intelligence. As we have it, then we're able to say, you know, for example, using the word angry versus using the word disappointed. You know,
yes.
Angry versus using the word I'm sad, I'm saddened. And kids oftentimes, you know, we'll go back to kids because, again, kids, you know, we can look at them and understand their feelings. Adults, they're repressed a lot of the time, so they fake it. But, you know, when you look at a kid and a child gets angry, they tend to start sulking, they look down, they go, you know, they tighten up their fists, they look down, and then they walk away. So how is we, you know, as adults, going to help them? What we can say to them, number one, you know, what are you feeling? You know, what is the feeling? Again, what is the feeling? You know, what is it that you wanted to have? You know, what happened in this situation? Well, can we choose something different? You know, is it that you were just sad because you wish they were here? You know, and it's often funny because we also jump into conclusions and we think that their meaning of anger is the same thing as our meaning of anger.
That's
so,
good. Yeah, that's a good point. We have to learn what that means to them and what their feelings mean to them. And the best way to do that is to listen. And it's very good. If we're aware at all, you know, we can lie. Our emotions don't lie. So when people basically communicate a lot more by our body gestures, by our tone of voice, and the actual words that we say. And if we pick those types of things up, and you know, I can be talking to somebody, and they can say, I'm not angry, and I can, and I'll say, yeah, but you know, you look angry. Your words, your tone is angry, but you're telling me on the other hand that you're not. Well, there's a disconnect here. You're saying you're not, but you're, you know, all your gestures, you look that way, and you know, so our emotions, we basically give us away. They're the honest picture of the world to the world of what we are and who we are and how we're reacting, you know, because we can manipulate our words, but it's very hard for us to hide our emotions.
Yeah, and one way to definitely, it excites me to hear you say that, because it's, you know, one way we can actually change our emotions is by moving, physically moving, you know, go for a walk, go run, go, you know, go think about it and say, well, how else can I see this? You know, if somebody didn't show up at 10 o'clock when they were supposed to and I'm thinking that they did me wrong, well, how else could I feel differently? And I know that, you know, because it's happened to me, where instead of choosing that victim mode, say, well, maybe something happened to them. You know, maybe something happened to them. Immediately when you consider that, you feel the shift inside your body. You know, you go from being tense to all of a sudden being like, oh, wow, you know, something could have happened. And you shift. And, you know, and really, like for me, I can only say that I was injured. I was injured 2 years ago after a succession of injuries. And when I got injured, I was debilitated to the point that I couldn't really walk. And this is when I was doing my master's. At the same time being a single parent, at the same time having all the financial responsibility, and at the same time that I was in the military. And
wow.
What I told myself...
It's a load you're carrying.
An ambrosia of, you know, of things happening to me on top of me being physically injured. But, you know, what I said at that moment was, I will not let this defeat me. This is going to be something that I'm going to overcome. This is a challenge. This is something that I refuse. And again, it's our perception and the meaning. But listen, we have 3 minutes, and unfortunately, it's like I know you and I can go forever. And what I want to say is, you know, I know you're going to be having this book published that people can go and get it and download it now, buy it from you, theotherkindofsmart.com. You also told me just before that you're going to be starting a blog, so you're going to be featured on a – is it a station?
It's actually on a the Seattle Post Intelligencer. They have a section an online section that they will have blogs, and I will be one of the blogs on there. I'll be one of the reader blogs. They'll have my biography up there. It's not up yet. I have to post a few blogs, but it will be up there, and I'll regularly be posting blogs, and people can go in there and they can read my blog. They'll be able to make comments on my blog. So I'm really looking forward to this. This is very, very exciting, because I'll be able to reach a lot of people through this. And
well, good. Congratulations. You know that you can count on me to help you, because I'm going to be taking your book and on the road and using it with the different programs that I'm putting out there and always referring to it as a definite manual to have, you know, to take along. The other thing is, people want to reach you. How can they do so?
Well, they can email me at harvey.eigui@shaw.ca. They can also go on my website. It's www.theotherkindofsmart.com. And there, if they want to reach me, there's a link. They can just email me with their comments, questions, anything like that. I would love to hear from your readers.
Well, excellent. I'm also going to add, I'm going to make this 1 minute bleed. You're going to see how fast it is. I know that in the future you and I are going to be putting together, at least in my mind, also like to put together a seminar, do different things with this, you know, do perhaps even a teleseminar where we can actually study your book. This is all in the future planning. But in closing, with the 1 minute that we have left, corporations use this. They use these type of tests, emotional intelligence tests and all that. How can you relate that to us right now doing this on our own? Like, why do they use that? And how can we partake in that without even having to be in a corporation?
Okay, anybody can you know, you can do the test by there's a number in the back of the book. It's called Multi-Health Systems. You know, emotional intelligence at MHS.com, and they can tell you where you could take the test and how to take. The important thing is when you read the book, you don't really have to take the test. Most people will recognize where they stand in most of these areas. It's not really necessary to pay for a test and take an extensive test. There's a little quiz at the back of the book. You can get a feel for your emotional intelligence through that quiz. So basically, you don't have to do any expensive testing or anything like that. You will know when you read this.
With 41 seconds to go, and leave me a little room for closing, what can people get from emotional intelligence?
What they can get from it is they can get, you know, they'll be able to get, they'll be happier, they'll get more power, more power and joy at home, work, and play. I'm reading that off the book. Basically, their lives will work better. They'll feel better. They'll feel happier. They'll have better relationships. They'll feel more fulfilled. You know, everything that goes with that. They'll be more successful in life. They'll be able to reach their potential a lot better than they could before.
That's awesome. That's great, Harvey. I really thank you. I think it's just superb. You know, I will just add with emotional intelligence, they'll be able to kick butt.
That's right. That's one way of putting it. They'll be able to kick butt.
For starting with their own first.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Harvey, thank you so much. Thank you for being on Power to Be You. This is all about Power to Be You. It's about bringing distinctions, testimony, visionaries, coaches, leaders who can truly impact our world. And I count you as one of them. I thank you. I thank you for believing in yourself. And I thank you for having the courage to put this together, to undergo the studies, and to just being going forward and publishing your book. And I look so forward to working with you in the future. So just thank you so much, because you definitely have that power.
Thank you so much for your support, Sandra. It's wonderful. And thanks to your listeners for listening in. And hopefully you've got some information from this that will help you improve your lives. And I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very
Excellent.
Much.
Excellent. Bye, Harvey.